Welcome to the Photo Pros Podcast. You'll hear insights and anecdotes on the careers and lives of world-class photographers from all genres. Let's get inspired. Here's your host, Rob Noel.
Hello, and welcome to Photo Pros Podcast. I'm your host, Rob Noel. If you're a first-time listener, we're really glad that you've come to check us out. If you're a repeat listener, welcome back. It's been a while. And in fact, long story short, it has been a while since I have recorded an interview because we've had some major renovations going on at our home and studio here. And so it got very unpredictable in terms of knowing when the noisy construction was going to happen. So I really couldn't schedule anything much, not knowing when the noise was going to happen. So anyway, that's all finished and it's great to be back at it. And without further ado, let's talk about today's guest, who is Miranda Penturin, a freelance photographer and director specializing in portraiture, music, fashion, and beauty photography for over 30 years. She was born in Boston, Massachusetts, but now splits her time between New York and Los Angeles. She graduated from the University of Pennsylvania with a degree in creative writing, but her passion for photography overrode that major. Then in summer breaks, she interned with Boston photographers, and once she graduated, she fervently began assisting those photographers. She considers assisting the greatest photographic education that you can get and feels that this first step is really essential to truly honing one's skill. And we're going to talk about that in today's interview. She describes her style as graphic, sexy, and emotional, and Miranda is always vigilant for the moment that makes an epic image. Her clients include Max Factor, Coty, Sony, Universal, Bloomingdale's, Warner Brothers Records, Fox, Converse, Condé Nast, Four Seasons, and many other big brand names. She is currently working with Voices for Freedom, a humanitarian organization committed to abolishing human trafficking all over the world. Her images of the Dalai Lama and Archbishop Desmond Tutu provide the cover art for The Book of Joy, which spent 37 weeks on the New York Times top 15 bestseller list. Wow, I'm excited to get into this interview with you, so let's get to it. Well, welcome, Miranda. Thanks for joining me here on the Photo Pros Podcast. So excited to have you here today.
Excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. So it says on your website that you split your time between New York and Los Angeles. Now, is that actually two homes? How does that work?
Actually, up until COVID, it was two homes. Since COVID happened, I had to let my place in New York go, but I'm fully...
You're still bouncing back and forth.
Yeah, bouncing back and forth. I'm from the East Coast, so I always have a million places to stay. And I'm still, I have stuff in storage in New York.
Okay.
I'm still planning on reestablishing a footprint there.
So when you were living in two places like that, was that a work decision or a heart decision? Because I have to assume that if you were born in Boston, you are an East Coast girl at heart, are you?
Yes, okay. I am.
So that was a work decision then to maintain two homes on each coast?
It was both, actually, because it has occurred in the past 30 years that there's a tremendous amount of work in LA for still photographers. And that was what brought me out here initially. But even though I was really reticent at first, I have come to love LA. And I have a husband and a home here too. So that
now is he an LA native? Is he a West Coast native?
He is not. He's from New Jersey.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So you both have fallen in love with the West Coast.
Right. Yes.
Although the weather is a definite, game changer, right?
It's amazing. I had friends visit recently from the East Coast and they were saying to me, is it like this every day?
Not fair.
Basically, yeah, it's like it's in the 80s and sunny and clear, basically 8 months of the year, pretty much. Sometimes it's a little hotter, but it's mostly beautiful days here. So
That's envious for a lot of people, I think, to hear that. Yeah. So it sounds like you hunkered down over on the West Coast during COVID. And of course, being that COVID is still fresh and still a real thing.
Oh yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about that. What was that like for you? How were you able to scratch your creative itch during COVID?
Oh, I have a whole story about that. I The year before we had lockdown, I wish I had it sitting here. I bought this huge 60 to 600 Sigma Zoom because I do all this work in India and it really helps with what I do. It's an NGO. It helps to be able to be far away and be able to get close in. So I had this huge lens and nothing to do. I live near a bird sanctuary. So I started going there like, nah, this is something I can do. I'm going to take pictures of birds. And I shot, you know, cranes and herons and egrets and was like, yeah, that's okay. And then I started shooting crows and it's become a passion. I literally this weekend was shooting more crows with that lens. I love it so much. It's become like a life project.
That's amazing.
So they're so weird and different. And I'm going to add other birds to this project, but it's really, the project is about the relatability and the awkwardness of birds rather than the grace and the of birds. You know, it's really like crows and roosters and some hawks. And I mean, there's some, pelicans, like there's some weird prehistoric looking birds that are just fantastic photographic subjects. And I just started shooting crows and found out that they have this whole incredible life. And I got really wrapped up in them, obviously.
That's amazing. I'll be careful. You're going to have National Geographic banging on your door pretty soon.
Oh, I talked to them.
Did you really?
I had a Zoom with National Geographic. They were so nice.
That's
really
amazing.
Yeah. Fantastic. So, you know,
when I'm listening to you talk like that, I'm forming the question in my mind, like immediately you're talking story when you're talking about these photographs. So is that a bit of your journalism background creeping in?
Well, story. I was originally a writer. I came into photography kind of from the side because I had gone to school to be a writer, a fiction writer, and I've always been obsessed with stories and storytelling. So it came very naturally that I would use photography in the same way that I used writing. And it's always about the story to me.
Right. That's amazing. Well, I would love to, especially for our listeners, I would love to talk a little bit about your origins. First of all, let me ask, how long have you been doing this? What is your career length now?
Okay, well, I hung up my shingle in 1986. So what's the math now?
Do the math. 37, 38, somewhere in there.
Yes.
Years?
Somewhere
just under 40. Under 40.
Yeah, just under. Oh my God. That's terrifying. Good Lord.
Oh my goodness. We'll get to that other question later. But
yeah.
So how did you get started? Like you said just now that you started out in writing. You went to college and you took writing, but how did photography take over for you? Like, where did it first sort of rear its head in your life?
Okay, well, I've always been involved somehow in art since I was about five. I've been drawing and sculpting and etching and everything, you know, always had some creative thing going on. And when I went to college, I specifically wanted to be a writer, and I'm still a writer. I have a novel that I'm doing a rewrite of, and I've written a narrative short that I'm going to produce and direct, and I love writing. I love reading. It's really, you know, I love story. I just, you know, I'm a fiction addict and consume story all the time. I realized as a student at the University of Pennsylvania, where I was taking photography classes as well as writing classes, that I would have to either be a teacher or an editor if I wanted to continue to write. And I didn't really want to do either. So here was this other thing I was doing that I really loved. And I thought that I could support myself as a writer by being a photographer. And I always use the example of it being like supporting yourself as an actor by dancing. It doesn't really pan out that way. But happily, I love what I do. You know, I started out with it as like almost a side hustle, and really immediately got fully sucked into it. I mean, I graduated from college in 1983 and was a working photographer in 1986. That little section of time in between was taken up by assisting, which I have to stop and do a promo for. There's nothing better for your career than assisting. It's essential to assist. And it's become a trend right now to completely skip that step. And just because you can take a picture now and look at the back of your camera and see that there's an image there, people are like, I don't need that part. You learn so much assisting. You learn not just the inner workings of your equipment and, the various amazing possibilities there are in every kind of lighting, but you learn how to talk to people. You learn how to be kind. You learn who your partners are going to be, who your creative partners are going to be. You meet your clients as an assistant. So when you skip that, you're jipping yourself out of a whole vast world of possibilities.
So you assisted.
I assisted. Yes, I did. I assisted. Just before to be clear. I assisted, though, I took a really terrible job in a sort of lab / grip and grin photo mill where I would either be in the roach infested darkroom or I was in Boston. So taking pictures of like Billy Bulger shaking hands with Ed King, these kind of grip and grin gross, situations.
Not a lot of creativity there, eh?
None whatsoever. And fast, you just had to be like, whoosh, think on your feet, get in there, get out. And you're 22 and just hoping for the best. And, maybe it's okay. Maybe your flash is working, So it was a real, a crapshoot, but luckily I got out of there and started assisting. And, I interned for 2 summers before I graduated with some Boston photographers. And when you're a photographer in Boston, you are a general practitioner. You shoot cars, you shoot shoes, you shoot catalog, Land's End. You shoot floppy disks. So I learned how to do everything and got really familiar with all different kinds of lighting and worked with a bunch of fantastic photographers, architectural photographers and car photographers and baby photographers and commercial photographers shooting a lot of food. My first two assisting internships were with a photographer whose name was Jack Richmond. And I kind of became his food stylist because I would run out and go to Haymarket, which is our, the big open marketplace in Boston, and buy a bunch of fruit and come back. And we'd do an ad for Howard Johnson's ice cream and have all this fruit in it. And it's just fun to learn like every aspect. And in that, I learned not just darkroom, how to use a view camera, all the, ins and outs of Polaroids and loading film in the dark, loading that view camera film in the dark, which is just, it's wonderful.
Almost a lost art these days, right?
Fully. And having to process film in complete darkness, like dip and dunk,
Big responsibility.
And then, I'm an intern, so I'm also sweeping and making coffee. You learn humility, it's important. That's really important. And I love any opportunity I can to take interns onto my set because their enthusiasm and their excitement about being on set and participating is really, really inspiring.
That's probably the best advice I've heard on assisting in a very long time.
Okay, cool.
And that's amazing. I'm a college professor. I teach photography to students and we are always pushing in the second year in the last term to say like, who are you going to go work for?
Right.
And the thing I find though today is a lot of them are very nervous. There's a self-confidence thing going on. I don't know, maybe we were just taught to be tougher back in the 70s or something. I'm not sure. But so when you take on an assistant or an intern these days, what do you look for? What are the qualities you're looking for?
in the very first thing is that they be a good human. The most important thing is that they be easy to get along with and looking to work hard, because every person on set has to be pulling their weight. I'm looking for someone who's pretty egoless, because the person that we're focusing on is in front of the camera. And when you have a bunch of egos behind the camera, it makes it complicated. It's very interesting working with all these different personalities, and you ultimately end up with a crew of people that you adore, that are your second family, and you look forward to seeing them, you know, as often as you possibly can, because they're part of your creative process. They're your creative partners, your assistants, your digitechs, your, you know, hair, makeup, styling. It's all this big, beautiful family. And it's a joy to get to do that kind of work with people that you love and respect and admire.
When you have worked in as many different genres as you have, so you've done music, you've done actors, beauty, fashion, like that's not typical these days. People tend to specialize a lot more. And do you think that's helped your career, being someone who's able to transcend all those different genres?
It's hard to say whether or not it's helped it, because I never went, okay, I'm just going to shoot beauty. Forget all these other opportunities. Meh. I don't need to do TV advertising anymore, or music packaging, or any of that. The last 10 years has seen a massive change in the business, where the music industry is essentially, you know, unless you're Beyonce, there's not going to be a huge packaging shoot, you know. So all the beautiful things we grew up with, that I honestly, my heart aches for kids these days that they don't get to open up a double album and see all the art inside. It was amazing. They were works of art. And I know some of these people that produced some of these projects, and they're incredible creatives with amazing minds. And now we're in this place where people don't even, you don't buy a CD. Nobody consumes music that way anymore. People consume it now song by song. There isn't a, you know, this beautiful linear thing called an album anymore. I mean, people make them, but it's not the same.
People don't listen to albums like they did.
No.
Although I have hope, because my kids, especially my son, he's discovered vinyl in a big way, and he's just been transformed by the experience. He says I used to always just like listen to one song and just go one at a time. And now he's listening to entire albums. So maybe there's a future for album art.
That would
be nice. Yeah.
It's become like hipster to play vinyl.
Yeah. So not maybe huge numbers, but
I hope.
So of all those different genres that you have worked in, what's your favorite kind of job to work at, and why?
Honestly, it's even though I love everything that I get to do. Honestly, my favorite is music, because collaborating with musicians on what the creative is going to be is the most fun, and you get to stretch the most creatively when you're doing music packaging, because you can make it absolutely anything. Like Tori Amos wanted to do tarot cards for her. I did, like a midwinter something album with her CD. And she wanted, it was very post heavy. I'm not a post heavy person, but my job is to realize my subject's vision. So we collaborated on this, and it was a blast, and she's incredible to shoot. And we ended up with this very, you know, fantasy oriented series of images that they used for the packaging. Shooting artists. It really depends if you're shooting. I shot Blink 182, and we shot at an airport in Carson, California, and kind of shot out on the runway. And it was really kind of raw and cool and fun and completely different shooting pop, like Selena Gomez, where it's very pretty and sweet, and the vibe is really about beauty and emotion. And it's just this opportunity to get to do all these different things. And honestly, if you think about it, that really has been why I've run my career the way I have, because I like to do everything.
You want to do it all?
I love shooting beauty.
I wonder if that goes back to the fact that you trained and assisted doing every kind of photography.
Possible. Because right? You feel, you know, like if you can do everything, why not do everything?
Absolutely. Sounds yeah. like a good way to get things, you know. Like, I think that's the thing that people struggle with, is like there's all these different kinds of photography. And today, one of the things that I found going to photo education, as some of the instructors were just talking about endlessly specializing, mm-hmm. specializing. And I said, you know, well, that's great if you're in the top 5%. You know, if you're a specialist and you're the one they all call, that's great.
Right.
But if you don't have the diversity to bring revenue in from different streams, mm-hmm. especially look what happened when COVID hit. If you were a wedding photographer, you were dead in the water, right?
Yeah.
So for sure. Anything people related. So it says on your website, I believe that's where I found this, Miranda's intention when she shoots is to reveal the epic, whatever the subject.
Yes.
I love that line. So what kind of process do you go through when you take on an assignment to be able to deliver the epic? Like, what is that process like? And I imagine it's different depending on the size of the job, whether it's a campaign or whatever. But let's say if it were just a portrait session, how do you in your mind get that process started? And I see you're reaching for a book.
I make these drawings. Wow. I map out the shoot that I'm going to do. And I write myself notes about what the lighting's going to be. I check them off as I go.
So you're storyboarding, basically.
I'm storyboarding, and I've storyboarded forever. It's always been about thinking about what the shot is before I ever get on set, what the angle is, what the lighting is, what the emotion is behind that image, and directing the shot to go that way. Ultimately in service of the client or the subject or whatever, it is my intention always to reveal the most amazing, heroic thing about that person or that subject. I know there are lots of photographers who I completely admire and adore who are looking for the awkward, the weird, the uncomfortable moment where you really see like strip, open the, you know, like cut their chest open and see what's inside. Full admiration for that. I'm not that me. It's not.
That's pretty much how Avedon worked, right?
Fully. Yeah. Especially in his later years when he was doing like the portraits of the American West, it was ugly.
Almost cruel.
In a beautiful way, but it was not flattering, and that's okay.
Yeah.
I love those. I love his entire career, the soup to nuts, everything. And I especially love that he died doing what he loved. He shot right up till the end. He was at the Republican National Convention shooting his last shots. Yep. And that was his, you know, he died right after
that. Amazing. That's amazing.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm like, yes, that's what I want to do. I have no intention of retiring. Why? I do what I love. Why would I? Joan Rivers said, what am I going to do? Go lie on a beach? No.
Well, we share something in common in that for sure, because that's exactly how I feel. Why would I retire? What am I going to do? Oh, yeah. I know. I'll have a hobby. It's called photography.
Right. Thank you.
You know, but if I can still get paid while I'm doing it, all the better.
Right.
Irving Penn did the same, right? He was working at Vogue well into his 80s. Which is remarkable.
They're my heroes.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So, incredible thing to think. I'm also interested in your thoughts on what it takes to make a great portrait.
Huh? Well, I always research my subjects first, see, you know, where they're from and what their story is and what their origins were and start there, and then I'll make my drawings and choose what my lighting is going to be. And I love having being my own lighting director. I know a lot of photographers who just hire someone and show them a tear and say, I want to do this. But I love knowing what my lights are going to do. I have modifiers that I adore. And when I start to plan a portrait, I think in terms of the modifiers, is it going to be an extra small box? Is it going to be a beauty dish? Am I going to go like wide and soft with a couple of boxes and a giant silk? Am I going to just do open shade? You know, it all gets informed by initially how it's going to be lit.
So it's obvious that you are creative. So now listening to you say that about, I'd like to be my own lighting director. So you consider, you consider yourself a technical photographer as well as a creative?
Yes, absolutely. Yes. And I am an addict for information. I want, like, for instance, this past weekend, I was out doing astrophotography and doing long exposures in Joshua Tree in the middle of the night, which was a blast, you know, just the opportunity to try something new with my equipment is always exciting. I'm dying to, you know, I've never really shot with a good camera underwater. I've always wanted to do that. So that's
nothing. On the bucket list.
There's no such thing as a Nikonos anymore. There's no beautiful underwater body. You need a housing now. You can't just buy an underwater camera. Right. Which is sort of a hole in the market. Nikon, hello.
Yeah. Are you listening?
Are you listening? They're not listening. They're so not listening. But I really, any opportunity to learn something new technically, I'm excited about. I love it. So, yeah. And you know, and that now includes software too. Of course, you know, I'm fully enmeshed in the world of Adobe. And I'm a director as well. So I do a lot of editing in Premiere and I'm learning After Effects and just, you know, more tools for the toolbox.
Excellent. Well, that's really what it is. Yes, that's what you're describing, right?
Yeah.
Some of the tools have changed, but the fundamentals of photography haven't really changed at all, have they?
No. Right?
Great lighting, imagination. And your enthusiasm and passion for this thing we call photography is just infectious. I'm loving every minute of listening to this.
I'm really enjoying talking with you.
Because I think sometimes, you know, people must go, don't talk to Rob. All he wants to talk about is photography, you know, at a party.
I could talk about it endlessly, literally.
Everywhere that I've read up on you, and I like to do my research, and interviews I've listened to with you give massive credit to the crews. And so I wonder if you like to work with the same people over and over, or do you like to shake it up and try creating new crews and trying, you know, people that you haven't worked with before, and maybe that might be a good thing and maybe not. So where are you at with that?
I love meeting new crew, but I do have my go-tos. I'm always happy to have new people come on in, and I'm always happy to welcome new females onto my crew because we are still a tiny little percentage of what's out there. Women still get 3% of the jobs that are awarded. So any opportunity that I can get to help another female photographer on her way up, I'm in. Especially excited to work with female digitechs, with women who are usually in a man position. Come on in. I'm right here. What can I do for you? 100%. I just worked with a new female assistant. The last job I shot, she was awesome. She was wonderful. And I know her work. She's a student. She was a student at Art Center in Pasadena. And her work is spectacular. So anything I can do to help, anything, I'm happy to do. I want to help. And of course, young male photographers as well.
Of course. Yep.
You know, I had an intern on that same shoot who was a young guy who's still a student. Come on in, you know?
Yeah.
Whatever I can do to help and on set, ask questions. You know, Yeah. You're there to learn. So please ask questions.
So without, shading any disrespect to the gentleman out there in this field, mm-hmm. do you feel like the marketing of entertainment and music and all of those things, New York and LA, is it still an old boys club basically, or is that changing slightly?
It's changing slightly, but I think it's really important to emphasize, and I'll say this as gently as I possibly can, it's really important for women to reach down the ladder and help other women up. Mm. There is a boys club. There's not a girls club. Women don't have that same, I'm not saying all women, because many women are about helping other women, but a lot of women in a position of power can sometimes lean towards, I had to fight my way here. You have to fight your way here too. I just want to have the opposite philosophy of that. I want to help any way I can, whatever it may be. I post my lighting. Anything I can tell people. I'm not, there's no, veil of secrecy I'm not standing behind some, oh no, I'm not going to share my, I want to share as much information as I can.
Yeah.
Nobody has your eyeballs.
Right.
Nobody is going to see things the way you see them. All it is a box of paints. It's about how you use that box of paints that makes your work yours. Mm. And it shouldn't be a secret where the paint is.
Yeah. It's just a process. So, yeah.
Yes, exactly. So I want to share as much as I possibly can and help as much as I can.
I love that. Do you spend much time on social media? Like, are you on Instagram?
Yeah, sure.
One of my favorite things that Art Stryver does is his behind the scenes post,
which I love and I'm really inspired by. And I will do that as well. I'll just say this was I shot this with a beauty dish and a big blah, blah, blah. And I love that he also will post the setup, like put up a picture.
Exactly. Yeah.
Bravo Art. I think that's fantastic. He's incredibly generous as well as being incredibly talented and gifted. Talented.
And you're both giving back. That's the thing I noticed. Like, you give back as well. You're involved. I think it's in LA, you've been doing some things there where you are having classes and workshops and things like that, which I think is fantastic because let's face it. I mean, in the point you're at in your career, you don't need to do that. You're doing it because you want to and you love it, right?
I want to
even though you didn't want to start teaching at the early point of your career, you're doing it anyway.
Yes.
Which is awesome.
Which is kind of funny. Yeah. That it worked out that way.
Yeah.
I love going to Art Center or LACP I did last year a seminar for Palm Springs Photo Festival. You know, it's just, it's an opportunity.
That's fantastic. Love it.
Work with young photographers.
So you just started talking about lighting, which just got me all excited. And so I almost want to sort of do like a rapid fire question thing. Like, what's your favorite hard light or soft light?
Ooh, hard, honestly.
Hard light. Oh, you like that edgy contrast.
If I had to choose, it'd be hard light. Yeah.
Hard light. Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
So beauty dish, is that one of your go-tos?
Beauty dish is a go-to for sure. And then there are small soft sources that end up being, they kind of read as hard light and yet they still have the soft edge, which I think is beautiful.
Yeah.
It's very hard to say, hard or soft.
Yeah,
I know, right?
I mean, it's not really fair question.
It's hard, for sure.
But hard light for sure, if you had to choose.
I do also appreciate soft light, but I like hard light. I also really love the Ellen Chrome Rhodolux Deep Throat. That is a beautiful modifier that is so insanely versatile. It comes with two baffles, so you can use it like a giant magnum. It's a silver inside and it's a deep. So it gives you a very focused light, but you can also put in one or both baffles and end up with a softer directional light that's really beautiful. So it's just a gorgeous light. I had an assistant who I worked with one time show me, he built a baffle with a piece of, Tough Roscoe and a piece of black wrap. So it was like a beauty dish baffle, and it's gorgeous because it takes out that center spot and you just have this beautiful wrap around soft light. So
the reason I love to get into this,
you can do that with spun, or you can do with any. I prefer spun as a diffusion. That's my go-to.
Okay. And the reason I wanted to get into that was because I feel like, and you mentioned this earlier, where like some photographers can't be bothered to assist. I believe some photographers starting out also can't be bothered to learn lighting. It's like, well, it's a softbox. It's an umbrella. What else? You know, whatever.
No.
And it's like, and then you say something about a parabolic and they're like, so what's the difference? And I think it's because they're not willing to put in the 10,000 hours to see what these modifiers actually do.
Mm-hmm. Right? And a parabolic is so cool. I love a broad color, big 300 parabolic. That's just like sunshine.
You need some space for those babies, eh?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yes. Sometimes when you're shooting TV advertising, you have to have like three or four sets going all at once. And I have had like three of those in a stage, all on different sets. And it's just cool to see these like spaceships.
Oh, yeah.
Sitting there on set.
So do you, I'm assuming you rent studios as you need them. Is that right?
Yes.
Have you ever had a home base, your own studio where you just went in every day type of thing?
Yeah. In Boston, I did.
Yeah. Having your own studio?
I do. I really do. I do. And I think about it all the time. I'd love to have my own psych and have everything. I did for a while. I belonged to this collective in downtown LA, which was fantastic. There was this wonderful building that had these huge factory windows facing south and a fire escape that looked out on Santee Alley, which is this super active little funny black market sales alley. It's really like you can get your, you know, your swap meet Louie down there.
Yeah.
And it was wonderful. And we all shared it. Oh, and it had a dark room too.
Wow.
So I think there was me and maybe five other photographers that would rotate through and just, you know, sign up and it was wonderful, but it went away. It just, you know, didn't stick around.
Time
so
changed.
I am thinking about it. Yeah. I am. I always think about having my own studio for sure.
I have a small studio attached to my home and I used to have a for around here anyway, it was a bigger studio and I always miss it. But then I keep reminding myself about the overhead it took to run it.
Oh, yeah.
And then miss it a little bit less.
Yeah, for sure. No,
Just for the gearheads out there, it's the inevitable question. We have to ask it. So what is your camera of choice these days, digitally anyway?
It's a Nikon D850.
D850, okay.
Yeah.
So DSLR, you haven't gone into that whole mirrorless world at this point?
I have, and I don't like it. I don't like looking through my viewfinder and seeing what looks like a little electric TV screen.
Little TV, yeah.
I don't like that little TV. I like analog. I like looking through my lens. I never really appreciated rangefinders because I wasn't looking through the lens. That's where the soul comes through. You know, I mean, I shot a job actually with Nikon 7Z, Z7,
right? Yep.
Whatever it is, you know, it's mirrorless.
Yep.
About as big as like a box of gum.
didn't feel right.
It was just weird.
Felt like a toy.
You know, I have to say, in terms of reciprocity, crazy. You know, just like I was shooting Elvira for a TV campaign.
Awesome.
And I was also doing, this is just a classic COVID story. I was also shooting unit, which I never do. So I had to put the camera on silent mode, which was bizarre.
Yeah.
Like just that you could touch it and see.
Did it take a picture?
It took a picture. It was crazy. Just like didn't vibrate, didn't anything.
Yeah.
And I was shooting it like 25,000 ISO. And it was fine, but it didn't make my heart sing. I just don't love those cameras. I would love to love them. If one comes along that
fits the bill,
makes me happy, I'll consider it. But
well, it's your bio says you also love your 30-year-old Nikon FE2.
I do. And I love my old film cameras. I have a Calumet that Jack Richmond, a food photographer, gave me as a farewell present. And I have not shot with that in years.
Not with the 4x5.
I got it.
But that's a commitment, right?
It is a commitment. And you can't get Polaroid. I mean, you can get Polaroid, but it's not what it was.
Yeah.
It's not Polaroid anymore. It's something else.
Yeah. What about the Nikon FE2? Do you ever pop a roll of film through that anytime just for fun?
Sure. Yeah. Yes. I have a personal project, a life project that involves the darkroom that is about making Sabatier prints. Ooh. And that requires film. Mm. So I will continue to feed that project with film.
That's awesome.
Anytime I can. Yeah, for sure.
So tell me, what photographers, living or gone, have you been most influenced by, Miranda?
That's interesting. Well, first, instantly, is Helmut Newton. He was always my, you know, the guy who just blew me away. But when I started, it was Brassai, Dwayne Michaels, Lillian Bassman, those, you know, original heavy grain, you know, real visionaries who would go out into the night, Brassai in Paris or, you know, into a club or, oh my God, I love, jumping forward a few years, Roxanne Lowett. Amazing. I love her. I love her style. I love her fearlessness, her sense of humor. I think she's amazing. Of course, I love Cartier-Bresson. Who doesn't love Cartier-Bresson?
Yeah.
I love Peter Beard. What a nut job. I love that he was like, I'm going to go get gored by a rhino. Woohoo! You know, I mean, just like run out there into the jungle with some models and risk your life for the images. You know, I could go on and on. The people that I admire that are shooting now, I mean, it's just an endless list. Of course, I love the fashion photographers. I love Ruven Afanador so much. I love
Steve his Klein. Work. Yeah.
Oh my God. So incredibly talented. I love Camilla Akrons. I love Frank Ockenfels. How can you not? Love his work. Yeah, absolutely fantastic. I just went to a show downtown of a woman's work, Melanie Nissen, who just put out a book called, hang on, a small plug. It's right here.
Oh, you got it.
Yeah, I got it. Yes. She just put out a book called, come on, camera. Hard and fast. Yes. Wow. It's all, wait, come on, camera. It's all punk rock. It won't show them. It's amazing. It's Sid and Nancy. But she was shooting backstage during the punk era. And it was so inspiring to see those prints up and to see, you know, like, I love a giant contact sheet. It just is like, you know, so raw and grainy and beautiful. I love that. I could continue. Who else?
Well, I mean, that's a good list right there. And the reason I like to ask that question is because I often think about photographers who are, you know, finding the podcast and who maybe have never been exposed to some of these names. And I just feel like your photography education isn't complete until you go back and look at the people whose shoulders we stand on.
Yes, 100%. I got to just say a few more. Heineken Hein, amazing, unbelievable. I love Horst. Of course I love Irving Penn and Avedon, love them. And Annie, Annie's just, you know, especially her Rolling Stone years. That was, she had a show a couple of years ago that was all that work that was so inspiring and so creative. And like every shot, every assignment was some new revelation. So just seeing the evidence that someone has done the work.
Yeah.
in the single photograph is glorious. It's really
what I think is interesting about Annie's career is that she reminds me of Avedon in the fact that her style has changed so radically at different times in her career.
Yeah. Like Picasso.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right.
That's what artists do. They don't have to choose to take one picture over and over and over again.
Right.
There are photographers that have made wonderful, beautiful careers of being able to say, this is a Platon portrait. Mm-hmm. When you hire Platon, you are hiring him for this one thing. But if you look at all of his work, that's not all he's doing. He's just famous for that one thing. Albert Watson, another huge hero of mine. Mm. It's about this very specific light. But if you look at his book, Cyclops, it's such a huge range of work. Mm-hmm. And it's all just gorgeous. I love his work. I think he's a genius.
It's interesting that so many of the photographers that we've mentioned are probably best known for maybe a dozen images.
Huh.
If you think
that's
about
interesting.
It. Yep. Like if I were to say Karsh, the first picture that comes to most people's mind is Winston Churchill, right?
I think of Sophia Loren.
You think of, okay, Sophia Loren. But I mean, you just know what I mean, right? There's like maybe a dozen images that we'd say mm-hmm. that's what we attribute to that artist. Mm-hmm. How, if you were to look at your body of work, Miranda, can you think of what your dozen images would be?
Nope. Impossible.
Impossible. Yeah.
I can say, you know, like for instance, which jobs had the most impact. For sure, you know, it getting to go to Dharamsala and photograph the Dalai Lama was probably the greatest opportunity and most incredible experience of my life. Those are not, I'm happy with those photographs, but I wouldn't say those are my favorite photographs I've ever taken. You know, it's just really
but so those much experiences are maybe the experience that stands out for you.
Yeah.
So I was actually going to get to that. So we'll just go right to that now. And the question I'm asking you is, were you in any way changed by that encounter? I mean, you're with the Dalai Lama and Bishop Tutu. So I have to ask, was that life-changing in some way?
Yes, it was.
How so?
It really was. It was such a revelation to see these two Nobel laureates. They have no peers, maybe the Pope. Who else? You know, there's no one else like them. And they are giddy as children together. They are so funny and silly and goofy together. They're best friends. And just the way they interact and tease each other and laugh at each other and really get emotional about, you know, like they share, they've both had horrific things happen to them. And yet they both are so, I mean, the Dalai Lama's religion, he says, my religion is simple. Kindness is my religion. That's it. Mm. And Desmond Tutu, who is a man of God, his real, the backbone of his belief is forgiveness. You think about, this is someone who's been tortured.
Yeah.
And he's about forgiveness. So it's amazing just to be in their presence and to listen to them talk about their lives and to see how joyful and funny and delighted they are with each other and with life. Huge, huge lessons about, for me, gratitude. You know, I mean, I feel so grateful to have been in that room and we got to spend 10 days with them. So it was mind-blowingly amazing.
Of course.
And then to just learn, you know, from their experiences and really be grateful for, you know, every day, every opportunity, every breath.
What a contrast from what's going on in the world these days, right? Like to think that these men who influence so many people and the kind of message that they bring, you know. Yeah, it's definitely one of the privileges of our job, right? Is the kind of people that we can maybe come in contact with that ordinarily we wouldn't.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Yes.
And I think that must be sort of interesting about the working with celebrities as well, is that, you know, a lot of photographers, that's the whole thing. I just want to work with celebrities. And then when you do, you suddenly realize, well, geez, they're just normal people.
Yep.
Right? They're and you're going to meet, you're going to meet some really super incredible, nice celebrities. And then you're going to meet some that are maybe not as
not
great.
Not so
right?
nice. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So just like regular people out there.
Yes, exactly. I'm grateful. Wow. I've really had mainly like 99% all nice experiences. There are certainly a couple that weren't, but you just make those go by fast.
Mm, absolutely. This might be a tough question for you too, then. Completely different topic.
Sure.
Is there anybody that you haven't photographed that you would really love to photograph?
The thing is, my answers are a little embarrassing.
That's okay. because nobody's listening.
When I started shooting, I was also in like the punk scene, and I was in at the Rathskeller in Boston shooting the Bad Brains, and you know, it was always about music for me in the beginning. And because I grew up in the 70s, I was a little obsessed. This is
I'm loving this.
Go
on.
I was a little obsessed with Jethro Tull.
Really?
So I've always wanted to shoot Ian Anderson. I've always wanted to shoot him. I know it's like, woo, completely out of left field, but I've always wanted to shoot him. Wow. And I just love him. And, it, you know, other than that, people who are like, you know, right now, I would love to shoot more politicians. Honestly, I feel more and more that the world is fully askew, and I envy you that you get to live in Canada. I mean, we really do not have our shit together down here, and I am concerned for this democracy that's not really a democracy at all. It's an oligarchy, and here we are voting and trying to influence our fate, and it really has nothing to do with us anymore. It's just all, you know. So I find these people, not just politicians, but people who are politically motivated, who are socially motivated, I'm interested in that portraiture. I would love more of that. Like, my very first celebrity was Gloria Steinem. And it was really exciting to get to meet her and shoot her, the opportunity to meet that mind, you know, is really exciting.
Absolutely.
Of course, there's tons of celebrities I'd love to photograph. I could, you know, make an endless list, but I'm really interested now in the people who are trying to change things.
For the better.
For the better. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. For the better.
Yeah. Not any politician, but certain politicians, right?
Certain politicians. And I like to believe that they all have the world's best interests in mind.
I would like to believe that. That's true.
Yeah.
Okay. So going back to this idea of your thoughts or advice for other photographers, because of your vast experience and where you're still working and you're still completely crushing it out there. So do you think there is still a future for photographers that want to work solely in still photography? Or do you think that video is becoming a necessary skill set to be viable in today's marketplace?
I have to say, I do believe that you have to do both. If you really want to get the jobs, you have a motion camera in your hands. And learn how to use it. Get yourself a Manfrotto video tripod and start to make little movies and learn how to edit. Just get yourself into a place where you understand what it means. And then you're a director and you can start hiring DPs. And they can do all of that work because that's what they're great at. That's what they went to school for. They know about cameras and lights and blah, 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 blah. All you have to do is be the one with the vision. So you're still really a photographer. You just have a different crew that's going to assist you in your motion vision.
Right. And so you should have at least some understanding, I think, is what you're saying. Like you should give it a go. And
yes.
And maybe that's not the thing you do forever, but you should at least understand the process.
Right, right. And there are lots of, there's backlash now. There are people who are just, you know, claim that they just shoot film.
Right.
And
yeah,
that's nice.
Yeah.
But
that's a luxury. You know, yeah.
Yeah. Right, right. Seriously, that is a luxury. Yeah. Because film has become a niche. Mm. And it's not easy. Like there's one lab in LA now. There's one.
Yeah.
Uno. So if I want to process my film, I need to go down to, you know, Wilshire and Cochrane and give my film to the icon and wait 3 days. It used to be, you could say, I need this in 3 hours.
Yes. Yes.
And get your proofs back.
Yeah.
And, done. That's just not a thing anymore. I suppose you could, but it'd probably be a fortune.
Well, that's the thing is the problem with the film business right now is that a new process like Polaroid, like you mentioned, right? Somebody came out with the Impossible Project and they said, well, we're going to resurrect it.
Yeah, it's okay.
And then some of these processes are around for a few years and then they're gone.
Right.
And then it's like, well, now what do I do? You know?
Right.
So, I feel like digital is here to stay and film is a really cool thing. And I'm glad I learned on film personally. I think it made me a better photographer, to be honest.
Absolutely. 100%. I think every photographer, every student coming up should have to shoot film and process it. Process it. Learn how to grind your beans and make your coffee. You know, I mean, start there.
I love that.
Or you go to Starbucks, you know, I mean, it's just knowing what it is, what it smells like, you know, I mean, I miss the smell of Fix. I miss having a dark room. That's, you know, something I'm really planning on making happen again.
That was the thing that attracted to me photography was the magic. That's what I called it. It was the magic of photography.
Exactly. It was the mystery in the box.
Yes. So my question to you then, Miranda, is the magic gone? Is there still magic in photography? Tell me what you think.
100%.
What is the magic now? What is the magic now?
It's that you have this piece of equipment that if you know how to use it, you can do all kinds of cool things with it, despite the fact that it's not a, you know, the film, a roll of film is not coming out of it.
Yeah.
Things that are magical for me involve the play of light, and there's, you know, wonderful new things like Profoto Air Remote. You don't need pocket wizards on all your packs anymore. You've got this little device that makes everything flash. Yay. Or you can, just like you used to with film, slow your shutter speed down and do a little shutter drag and make something unexpected and beautiful just by going like that with your camera, you know?
I love it.
It's there's so many, or you get a lens that you find magical, like it's an 85 1.2. And you have that, you know, mystical blurry, kind of like what I'm in right now.
Yeah.
Space where there's just, you know, the shortest depth of field that gives you this beautiful emotional vibe. You know, there's so many things that you can do with a still camera, you know, that are, and even, you know, messing around with like old school stuff like filters, you end up with images, putting a filter on your camera that you would not create in Photoshop, that you can't get, like put a 25 red filter on your
Now you're shooting on Mars, camera. Right? Yeah.
Right. And it's like, ooh, you know, oh, it's so cool. Or
the famous four-star filter that I saw you talk about in one of your talks.
I love four-star filters. I love them. They're so dorky. And yet they do this goofy, magical thing that's almost never appropriate. But when it is, it's really cool. And it's like a little bit of a nod and a wink. because we all know that it's cheesy, but it's still a little Wizard of Oz moment there where ding, there's that little 4-point star. And it's
just, you're giving me fond memories of Coke and filters in the 1970s. My goodness. Right.
Or tobacco filter. Right.
Yes. The graduated filters. My gosh, I love those. Oh, Miranda, this has been fantastic. This has been the fastest hour I've ever done on PhotoPros. I can't believe
thank you so much.
This has been inspiring. Wow, it's been so inspiring. It's been amazing.
For me too.
I have one last question for you. It's a simple one. Redheads really have more fun.
Yes.
Yeah. I believe that 100% having spoken to you for the past hour. Yeah. I think you have more fun than just about anybody. And again, thanks for taking the time today. I really, really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And if I'm ever coming down your way to LA, I am going to give you a shout and look you up.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. Thanks again.
All right. Thank you. Take care.
Thanks for joining us on the Photo Pros Podcast. We hope you'll subscribe. And if you enjoyed today's conversation, we'd love for you to leave us a review on iTunes. Again, thanks for listening.